Hello, everyone. My name is Elijah Davis, minister of the 12th Apostolic Sabbatarian Congregation, Mount Zion, the 12th Round, Yellow, Texas. Today is June 1, 2024, or it is the 25th day of Sivan, 2028. We will start our first service on this Sabbath day. I read the song, and then we'll go into our service. We're dealing with Final Warning, track number 5 of Victory Holler. We're dealing with the 7 trumpets, and we're going to just continue on where we left off. And we're on page 67, it's part 4. It says Revelation 9:7, page 12. And their faces were as the faces of men. Go back up and do a little review and catch up to that. It says, in Revelation 9:7, first cloud, and its shape as a locust, were like unto horses prepared unto battle. Horses are all prepared for the battle by being well trained. A fact which in this connection manifested in earth that the entire, or that the early apostolic believers swiftly and proficiently marched on with their message as the horses in the battle array. Revelation 9:7, second cloud, and on their heads were as it were crowns like gold. So obvious as for the requirement, no interpretation. The locusts having crowns of the gold signified that being invested with the authority pure and excellent, the authority of the Asura, and such was exclusively the investment of members of the early apostolic church, for the Asura secured it unto them in his commitment. I will give unto thee, he said, the keys of the kingdom of heaven, and whatsoever thou shalt bind on earth shall be bound in heaven. And whatsoever thou shalt loose on the earth shall be loosed in the heaven. Matthew 16:19. Must be loosed in the heaven. Matthew 16:19. Revelation 9:7. Third cloud. And their faces were as the faces of men. Observe that the locusts have human faces, symbolizing intelligence, that mark the expression that they are masculine. Were they feminine, the symbol would be faulty, for the face of a woman does not naturally characterize a soldier. Page 67, Revelation 9:8. Final Warning, Track 5, First Cloud, and it had hair as the hair of women. A woman, a hair being her glory, 1 Corinthians 11:15, and a woman being symbolical of the church, Jeremiah 6:2. The feminine hair shows that the locusts were affiliated with the church and that she was their glory, so that we ourselves, says Paul, glory in you and the churches of Yahweh for your patience and faith in all your persecutions and tribulations And that's here and there, 2 Thessalonians 1:4. Revelation 9:8. There are lion is the most fearsome of the beasts that had he no teeth. He would be scarcely more fearsome than a dog. The locust having the teeth of lions, he notes that the earlier apostolic believers had their great potential power to defend themselves and to kill every beast, man, that was not of their kind, a Christian. Then had the ancient Israel against the heathen in their day. For this reason, it was necessary to command the locusts not to kill, a demonstration of the power which they possessed is seen in the fate of Ananias and Sapphira, who instantly, upon Peter's exposing their sin of dissimulation, fell dead at the apostles' feet. Acts 5:1-11. Clearly then, if Peter, without exertion on his part, has sufficient power to destroy hypocrites who came into his presence, he most certainly had as much power to destroy the heathen who attempted to retard the advancement of the gospel. Revelation 9:9, 1 Paul. They had breastplates, as it were, breastplates of iron. For the scriptural significance of the breastplate is faith and love. 1 Thessalonians 5:8. For the Christian's only defense and the locust breastplate were, as it were, breastplates of iron, the strongest metal known. The faith, therefore, of those fearless soldiers of the cross was so invincible, and their love for the Asher and for his people so pure and unquestionable that David, in the temple and in every house, they ceased not to teach and preach Asher. Acts 5:42. Therefore, so doing, they were killed like the locust. Oh, what a contrast between these heroic love slaves of Yahshua and most professed Christians of today. Revelation 9:9, 2 Chronicles. And the sound of their wings was as the sound of the chariots of many horses running into the battle. As has been seen so far, the symbol of the fifth trumpet show that though the early disciples were mercilessly persecuted and killed, yet they openly and fearlessly swarmed to the battle line to proclaim the gospel of the Asher, and in giving an individual sample of their fearless efforts, Paul said, "I kept back nothing that was profitable unto you, but have showed you and have taught you publicly, and from house to house, testifying both to the Jews and also to the Greeks,
not knowing the things that shall befall me. Acts 20:20-22. How many of today's disciples of Yahshua would knowingly risk their lives for the proclamation of the gospel? Even in a time of the peace, most Christians would rather send a missionary to do the work of which the Yahshua caused to be done than to go do it themselves. And thus serving by the substitute, by proxy as it were, they are not unlike the cuckoo who says her eggs and other, her lays her eggs in other birds' nests for them to hatch and to care for. And some, because of their ignorance of the Asher majesty and of his power to protect, and because of their blindness to their duty and to the recompense of the reward, or even ashamed openly to confess him in the word and in deed. Revelation 9:10 will be explained after Revelation 9:11. And they had a king over them, which is the angel of the bottomless pit, whose name in the Hebrew tongue is Abaddon, but in the Greek tongue hath he his name Apollyon. Genuine apostolic subjects of the kingdom of Yahshua have ever been Yahshua, have over them Yahshua. Let's do it again. For the genuine apostolic believers today, typical, as the subjects of the kingdom of Yahshua, have over them Yahshua, their king, ruling over them in the Old Testament time, 1 Corinthians 10:1-4, as well as in the New Testament time. He is therefore king over them in both periods. Consequently, the Old Testament scriptures, being originally written in the Hebrew tongue, give him the name Abaddon, whereas the New Testament scriptures, being originally written in the Greek, give him the name Apollyon. In the blazing light of this symbol, intensifying the illumination from the whole series of the symbol, which is a part and which no human mind could either have devised or thus rightly interpreted. For the Yahshua is clearly seen to be the king of his people in both the Old and the New Testament period, an author of the scriptures in both the Hebrew and the Greek. And from this fact, it follows that as he is the Word, the Bible in the human form, his Hebrew name, Abaddon, is also the name of the Old Testament scriptures. And his Greek name, Apollyon, is also the name of the New Testament scriptures, showing that he recognized the Yahshua sovereignty over the church, not only in the New Testament period, but also in the Old Testament period. Paul, in his epistle to the Corinthians, declared, "Moreover, brethren, I would not that you should be ignorant how that all our fathers were baptized unto Moses in the cloud and in the sea, and did all drink of the same spiritual drink, for they drank of that spiritual rock that followed them, and that rock was Yahshua, 1 Corinthians 10:1-4. Woe to him who accepts the one testament and casts aside the other, pays no attention to either, or exalts tradition above both. For the Abaddon Yahshua's name in the Hebrew, signifying him as a destroyer, shows that in the Old Testament period, he simply destroyed many of his enemies, whereas Apollyon, his name in the Greek, signifying him as an exterminator, shows that in the New Testament period, he will exterminate all the wicked. What beautiful precision of the connotation in these symbols, of appellations. And this earlier minotaur work is vividly pictured in the climate scene, and out of the mouth goeth a sharp sword, that with it he should smite the nations, and he should rule them with a rod of iron, and he treadeth the winepress of the fierceness and wrath of the Almighty Yahweh, and he hath on his vesture and on his thigh a name written, King of Kings and Sovereign of Sovereigns. And I saw an angel standing in the sun, and he cried with a loud voice, saying unto all the fowls that fly in the midst of the heaven, come and gather yourself together unto the supper of the great to Yahweh, that ye may eat the flesh of kings, and the flesh of captains, and the flesh of the mighty men, and the flesh of horses, and of them that sit on them, and the flesh of all men, that both free and bond, both small and great, Revelation 19:15-18. And to those, therefore, who accept Yahshua as their king, he is a savior. While unto those who refuse to have him rule over them, Luke 19:14, he is a destroyer. Hence, accordingly, the curses or judgments fall as a triumphant reveal upon those who reject the teachings and the authority of the Bible, and who, as a result, do not have the seal. These solemn facts gravely admonish us not to forget the Bible's warnings that our treatment of it will bring one of two results, death or life. Revelation 9:10. First part, and they had tails like the white scorpion, and there were strings in their tails, were stings in their tails. And they had, Revelation 9:10, first part, and they had tails like the, unto the scorpions, and there were stings in their tails. We have seen that the locusts are symbolical of the soldiers of the cross. We know that the tail of an animal is the hinder member of its body. In other words, its rear guard. So we have no choice but to conclude that the tails of the locust symbolize the church's rear guard, its followers. Furthermore, the tails being a connected part of the body shows that both the ministry and the laity of the early apostolic congregation were bound together inseparably under Yahshua, Romans 12:5, and contributing to a noun, so reached the record. For as many as were possessors of the lands or houses, as said, sold them, and brought the price of the things that were sold, and laid them down at the apostles' feet, and distribution was made unto every man according as he had sinned, Acts 4:34-5. Revelation 9:10, second car, and there were stings in their tail. Their tails representing their converts, and at the same time having stings in them, then obviously in the rapid accession of the disciple to the religion of the Yahshua, there was a sting, a serpent, to the wicked. What shall we, they cried in the consequent doubt of despair, do to these men, for that indeed a notable miracle hath been done by them, is manifest in all them that dwell in the Jerusalem, and we cannot deny it, but that it spread no further among the people. Let us say, straightly threaten them that they speak henceforth to no man in this name. And they called them and commanded them not to speak at all, nor teach in the name of the Yahshua. For the world is going after him. Acts 4:16-18, John 12:19. Revelation 9:5-6. And unto them it was given that they should not kill them, but that they should be tormented 5 months, and in those days shall men seek death, and shall not find it, and shall desire to die, and death shall flee from them. Seeing that the locusts are symbolical of the followers of Yahshua after the crucifixion, and that they were commanded not to resist their enemy, that 5 months, therefore, began at that time, and seeing, furthermore, that death does not as yet flee any man, the stress reigns over all, the 5 months are inconsequent, a figurative time, and extend from the crucifixion to a time when death shall flee from some men, that is, to the time when some will be made invulnerable to death, Revelation 9:10. Third clause, and their power was to hurt men 5 months. Their tails, representing their converts, at the same time having stings in them, then obviously, in the rapid accession of the disciples to the religion of Yahshua, there was a sting, a torment to the wicked. What shall we, they cried, in consequent despair, do to these men, for that indeed a notable miracle hath been done by them, is manifest unto all them that dwell in the Jerusalem. And we cannot deny it, but that it is spread no further among the people. Let us straightly threaten them that they speak henceforth unto no man in this name. And they called them and commanded them not to speak at all, nor teach in the name of the Yahshua, for the world is gone after him. Acts 4:16-18, John 12:19. Revelation 9:5-6. And unto them was given that they should not kill them.
Okay.
That they should not kill them, but that they should be tormented 5 months, and in those days shall men seek death and shall not find it, and shall desire to die, and death shall flee from them. Seeing that the locusts are symbolical of the followers of Yahshua after the crucifixion, and that they were commanded not to resist their enemies to the 5 months, therefore began at that time. And seeing furthermore that the death does not as yet flee any man, but still reigns over all, the 5 months are in consequence, are in the consequence figurative time, and extend from the crucifixion unto a time when death shall flee from some men, that is, to the time when some will be made invulnerable to death. Revelation 9:10, third clause. And their power was to hurt men 5 months. For the fact, too, that the trumpets are figurative is another evidence that these 5 months are figurative time. But why should this period in which the locusts, the apostolic believers, have power to torment men, be limited to the 5 months? It will be noted that the 144,000 are called the first fruits, denoting that they are sealed at the beginning of the harvest, the commencement of the time for the separating of the tares from the wheat, for the parable of the harvest. Then we must go for the full explanation of the 5 months period. In track number 3, the harvest, the time from the baptism of Yahshua until the close of the probation, is shown to be illustrated by the 12 figurative months, 6 from Yahshua's baptism to his crucifixion, 5 from the crucifixion to the end gathering of the first fruits, 144,000, Revelation 14:4, leaving 1 month for the end gathering of the second fruits, the great multitude, Revelation 7:9. During the 5 figurative months, the locusts were commanded to torment those who had not the seal of Yahweh, but not to kill them. This command implies that after the expiration of this period, the killing restriction will cease, and that from then on, the wicked will be killed rather than tormented only. At that time, the 4 angels of the Revelation 9:15 will have prepared themselves for to slay the third part of man. For these several linked facts present a solid chain of the evidence that ended an apostolic era during the 5 figurative months, Yahweh has deferred his vengeance to grace, and hence it follows inescapably that such Christians as executed the death penalty upon those who disagreed with them, were working against Yahshua rather than for him. For as the apostolics, the locusts, for they were commanded not to kill, but to bless even those who despitefully used them. Indeed, to him who would smite them on the one cheek, they were to turn the other cheek. And if he should take away their cloak, they were to let him have their coat. Also Luke 6:28-29. After the expiration of the five figurative months of the restriction, during which they were not to kill, some will be made invulnerable to death for the finishing of their gospel work, and will, if necessary, to the discharging of their responsibility, be glad to die, but shall not. Revelation 9 says, and in these days shall men seek death, and shall not find it, and shall desire to die, and death shall flee from them. For the expense of Yahshua's first disciple, will explain while that after the expiration of the 5 months, men will desire to die, but shall not. Despite the great persecution against the faithful of the primitive apostolic congregation, their vision of the world's great need urged them on to preach the gospel of Yahshua at the cost of their lives. And notwithstanding the cruelest death awaiting them, they, in the faith and courage in the Yahweh, held the light of the gospel before the people as constantly as the sun holds his rays over the earth. I came into Asia, testifies the death-bound apostle, after what manner I have been with you at all seasons, serving the Yahshua with all humility of the mind and with many tears and temptations, which befell me by the line and the weight of the Jews. And now behold, I know that ye all among whom I have gone preaching the kingdom of Yahweh shall see my face no more. Wherefore I take you to record this day, that I am pure from the blood of all men, for I have not shunned to declare unto you all the counsel of the other. And when we heard these things, both we and they of that place besought him not to go up to Jerusalem. Then Paul answered, what mean you to weep and to break mine heart? For I am ready not to be bound only, but also to die at Jerusalem for the name of the Yahshua. Acts 28:19-25-27-21-12-13. By the preaching in the name of the Yahshua, the apostolics and the Pauline were indeed seeking death, esteeming it the greatest privilege and honor to die for him. They desired to do so if others might by their death obtain eternal life. So the Yahweh's people today shall go through a time of the trouble such as never was, Daniel 12:1, when earthly tribunals shall cause to come to pass that as many as would not worship the image of the beast should be killed, Revelation 13:15, yet the word declares, at that time thy people shall be delivered, everyone that shall be found written in the book, Daniel 12:1. Oh, what a promise and what assurance. Who can comprehend Yahweh's mighty power and the glory of this long-awaited deliverance? Those who at all do and who fully trust in the Yahshua will, for the good of his people, go forth therefore unto him without the camp, bearing his reproach, Hebrews 13:13. And thus pursuing a course against all earthly favor by the proclaiming the message of the hour, they will be going forth as sheep in the midst of wolves, Matthew 10:16, seeking death. And although happy to die for Yahshua's sake, as the Revelator puts it, though they shall desire to die, the promise is that death shall flee from them, making it impossible for them to die. Now even the word of the wicked that is raised to kill them shall break and fall as powerless as a straw. Early writing 14, making them utterly invincible. In that day, saith Yahshua, whosoever shall seek to save his life shall lose it, and whosoever shall lose his life shall preserve it. Luke 17:31-33. In short, only those who desire to die for Yahshua's sake shall obtain eternal life. One woe of the fifth trumpet is passed, and behold, there come two woes more hereafter, Revelation 9:12. The next being in the sixth trumpet. And the sixth angel sounded, and I heard a voice from the four horns of the golden altar. This is Revelation 9:13. To 11:14. And the sixth angel sounded, and I heard a voice from the four horns of the golden altar. This is before Yahweh sent unto the sixth angel, which had the trumpet. These the four angels which are bound in the great river Euphrates, and are coming from the golden altar, their command, loose the four angels, shows that the sixth trumpet sounded sometime before the veil to the most holy apartment of the heavenly sanctuary was lifted. Otherwise, a voice would have come from the throne, for the most holy place, for the detailed treatment of the lifting of the veil, read track number 3, the harvest. But as has been shown, we are still in the period of the fifth trumpet, a fact which evokes the question, how then could the sixth trumpet have sounded before the events of the fifth had expired? It will be observed that though each of the trumpets began at a definite time, that one overlaps the other, and all seven extend to the second coming of the Yahshua. This is seen in the coexistence of the series of all seven. For the flood, the first trumpet, the Exodus movement, the second trumpet, the giving of the Old Testament scriptures, the third trumpet, the church going into captivity, the fourth trumpet, the Yeshua's first advent, and subsequent events, the fifth trumpet, all sounding louder today than ever before. And as these truths constitute the gospel for today, it is evident that there is a trumpet, the trumpets run in the consecutive order, each beginning at a different time. They all continue to enforce until the end of the world, terminating therewith. Thus, the rejection of the one being tantamount to the rejection of all seven, the lesson is sharply drawn that to object one truth is to reject the whole truth. With the 14th verse of Revelation 9 begins the description of the sixth trumpet, and it ends with the fourth verse of the Revelation. Okay. And it ends with the 14th verse of the Revelation 11, which announces for the second woe, a sixth trumpet is past, and behold, the third woe cometh quickly. Accordingly, each prophetic event recorded between the Revelation 9:14 and 11:14 was found the fulfillment and appeared at the second trumpet.
On the sixth.
On the sixth trumpet. Between the first and the second woe. And the light of this fact, we see that the time in which the two witnesses of Revelation 11:3 were to prophesy 1,260 days covered in the sackcloth must occur during the sounding of the sixth trumpet and bring in the future tense, the phrase shall prophesy 1,260 days, Revelation 11:3, shows that at the time that the trumpet began sounding, this period of the 1,260 days were yet future. For the voice which came from the golden altar said unto the sixth angel, which hath the trumpet, here's the four angels which were bound in the great river Euphrates. And the order for the identifying of the four angels, we must first understand the literal meaning of the river Euphrates. For the capital city of ancient Babylon was built on either side of the Euphrates. This divided the city into two parts. The river was also the source of the water, supplying a fortifying moat about the city. So, because the ancient Babylonians were the first to build on the banks of the Euphrates, and because the original application must attach to the original settlers there, the great Euphrates emerges as a type of the waters where the whore of Siddha, Revelation 17, 15. For the modern Babylon, and this important truth is amplified by the fact that the ancient city, Babylon, does not now exist, whereas prophecy calls for a Babylon today. Okay, it said, now, in order for there to be a modern Babylon, there must necessarily be a repetition today of the conditions and events essentially characterizing the ancient Babylon and its connection with Yahweh's people. Consequently, their captivity in Babylon, the top, Jeremiah 29:10, must find its parallel in the Babylon, the Antitype. Very obviously, therefore, the angels being bound in the great river Euphrates must be freed of the apostolic congregation during the period of her captivity in the antitypical Babylon, that great city, arising after the John's time. Furthermore, the statement made by the voice from the golden altar loose the four angels which are bound conclusively shows that when the voice spoke to church, the angels were already in captivity and was to be loosed, Revelation 9:15. What first fall, and the four angels were loosed. For the execution of the command, loose the four angels, Revelation 9:15, the first fall, meaning to set the church free from her captivity in Babylon, resulted in her being liberated from her long bondage and the tyranny of the church state rule, and in the Bible being restored to Yahweh's people so that they might study and worship in fear and in favor of no man and in the accountability only unto their conscience and unto their Yahweh. To the consequent dissolution of the church-state union, the four angels were loosed, Revelation 9:15, our last part, which were prepared for an hour and a day and a month and a year for to slay the third part of men. For the fulfillment of the Josiah Litch's prediction, calculating the an hour and a day and a month and a year of the Revelation 9:15, the total of 391 years and 15 days, reckoning a day for a year as in the Ezekiel 4:6, is the strongest semblance of the truth to be found in the Uriah Smith's interpretation of the trumpet. Little wonder, then, that its advocates are doing their best to keep the people believing in it by the stoutly maintaining that the great controversy lends support unto the position established by the Litch's prediction. In the year of 1840, reads the record in the mention, another remarkable fulfillment of the prophecy excited widespread interest. 2 years before Joseph Litch, one of the leading ministers preaching the second advent, published an exposition of the Revelation 9, predicting the fall of the Ottoman Empire. According unto his calculation, this power was to be overthrown in A.D. 1840, sometime in the month of August. At the very time specified, Turkey, through her ambassadors, accepted the protection of the Allied powers of Europe, and thus placed herself under the control of the Christian nations, for the event exactly fulfilled the prediction. Great Controversy 334 and 5. To say what the Great Controversy says is perfectly permissible, but to say that it is supporting the idea that Josiah Litch's interpretation of the hour, a day, month, and year biblically denotes a period of 391 years, 15 days, ending in A.D. 1840, and that is not permissible. Moreover, for the event which took place in 1840 did not fulfill the biblical prediction, for the very simple reason that at the end of the hour and day and month and year, the four angels were to slay the third part of men. In actual fact, though, at the date when Lizzie's prediction was fulfilled, no slaying took place, and Turkey, instead of being overthrown, was without bloodshed placed under the protection of the European national. Furthermore, the four angels are not a nation, for a nation is never symbolized by angels, were to be made free, and then they were to kill the third part of men, whereas the Turks kill none, but instead of being made free, they were really glad under the mandate. Still further, they were really placed under the mandate. Still further, John heard that the number of them who were to do the slaying were exactly 200 million cavalrymen, horsemen. But Turkey never had that many cavalrymen in all her lifetime. Having already seen that the fire, smoke, and the brimstone are symbolical, not literal, and that hence they do not come forth as a volley from a firearm in the hand of a Turk, we are in the consequence led to probe further for their significance. And in doing so, we find that Revelation 9:20 reveals that the symbolical fire, smoke, and brimstone result in the plagues, not firearms, but plagues, therefore are the means with which the horsemen slay the third part of men. Since the rest of the men which were not killed by these plagues, yet repented not of the works of their hands, that they should not worship devils and idols of gold, silver and brass, and stone, and of wood, which can neither see nor hear, nor walk, Revelation 9:20. For the objects and the slaying of a third part of the man is manifested not for the accomplishing of some selfish end, but rather for the helping men repent, resulting with the list, resuming with the religious tradition. It is plain to see that the great controversy is not attempting, and what it says concerning the prediction for the explanation of the subject of the trumpet, it is merely a recording of historical events. Therefore, the statement, in the year of 1840, another remarkable fulfillment of the prophecy excited widespread interest, must not be construed as advocating Josiah's religious interpretation of the Revelator's prophecy, but instead recording the fulfillment of his prediction based on the revelation. Thus, it was the letters, not the Bibles or the great controversy position, that exactly fulfilled the prediction. But one may say, or one may ask, if the Revelation 9:15, upon which Josiah lists prediction of the date in the question was built up, did not meet the fulfillment at the time he pointed out to, then what made the terse on the very date set accept the Christian nations as a protectorate? Did Satan's channeling bring the Turks to the terms on the date predicted by the list in order to forestall and discredit this wonderful truth of the trumpet, and thereby to firmly entrench his deceptions in the church? As to that, we do not know, but this we do know, that despite the fact that Litch unintentionally misapplied the scripture, yet on the very day which he predicted for the fall of the Ottoman Empire, some power brought the empire under the protection of the allied powers of Europe. Thus, though it is certain that on the set date something happened to Turkey, it is even more certain that the happening was not in the fulfillment of the biblical prophecy. Let it suffice, however, that the Assyrian turned Lysias' prediction into a blessing. When it became known, multitudes were convinced of the correctness of the principles of the prophetic interpretation of the 2300 days adopted by the Miller and his associates, and a wonderful impetus was given unto the Advent movement. Men of the learning and position united with the Miller, both in the preaching and the publishing of his views, and from 1840 to 1844, the work rapidly extended. Great Controversy 335. Once men fought the astronomical findings of the Galileo, they even forced him to recant his position that the earth was round, but the fighting the truth did not make the earth flat. Likewise, anyone fighting against the clear-cut evidences that the Revelation 9:15 did not meet its fulfillment in 1840, or as a matter of fact, trying to obscure the light on any other Bible truth, will in no way darken or doom it, but only darken and doom himself. But having all along, in the interest of the cherished ideas, confuse the mind of the laity by the misconcern of the Lord's teaching, for the adversaries of the present truth today will doubtless do likewise with this tract and with the great controversial statement concerning Nietzsche's prediction, that those therefore who have been accustomed to permit others to think for them, but who are concerned about their eternal welfare, be warned away from the deadly peril of such a course, and beware of rejecting that which is the truth. For the great danger with our people, says the spirit of the truth, has been that of depending upon men and making flesh their own. Those who have not been in the habit of searching the Bible for themselves or weighing evidence have confidence in the leading men and accept the decisions they make, and thus many will reject the very message Yahweh sends to his people if these leading brethren do not accept them. Testimony Message 106. How now to continue? Oh, this brings the end of our study. Our contact is at the 11th hour call. And that's number 11. Click on our audio archives. We're going to close now with a song.